another edition of Rose City Politics, where we inform, debate, discuss, and yes, sometimes even mock municipal issues in Windsor and Essex County. Sound off during the show through our Twitter account at RCP Windsor.
All right, and welcome to a slightly delayed edition of Rose City Politics on August 2nd, 2017. My name is Doug Sartori. I drew the short straw, so I am hosting tonight. Joining me on the panel are Kieran McKenzie. How are you doing, Kieran?
I'm doing very well, Doug. Thanks. On the second go around, you're a little kinder to me here.
Yeah. Well, don't get used to it, buddy. Paul Sinnott, how you doing, Paul?
Working through the technical difficulties, but we're broadcasting, so.
Right on. That's the important thing. And the dangerous Don Merrifield, how are you, Don?
I am running like a smooth machine, as always.
That's good to know. Pat Papadeus, how are
I'm
you,
I'm here. I'm well.
I'm okay. Here. Pat doesn't want to be here,
okay.
But she's here.
So tonight on the show, we have a exclusive interview with Ontario Premier Kathleen Wynne. We'll play that interview in a few moments, and then we'll have a conversation about it afterwards. Also on the show tonight, self-driving cars crossing the border, Windsor as a designated foreign trade zone, rising construction costs at the City of Windsor, and Budget 2018. Now, there may well be some other interesting topics that flow from these discussions, particularly from the Premier's visit to Windsor last week. So on that, we had an opportunity to interview Premier Wynne. Unfortunately, her first choice, Kieran and Don, were not available to speak to her.
She called. My agent couldn't arrange it. It was terrible.
So we had to play the second string.
I had to vacuum my pool.
Yeah. But
there was that matter of the restraining order.
There was, yeah. Yeah. She called, but then the RCMP showed up and said, don't go near the lady.
But Pat and I... We took it upon ourselves to fill the role that the other folks couldn't, and interviewed the Premier. We have about a 10-minute clip that we're going to play for you now, and then we'll come back on the other side and have a discussion about it. Before we go to the clip, one more thing. As Paul mentioned in the opener, you can interact with the show on Twitter. During the show, we do monitor our Twitter feed at RCP Windsor. So if you've got something to say and it's relatively clean, we will probably repeat it on the air. Have you got the interview clip ready, Paul?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go with Premier Wynne. Good afternoon, Premier Wynne.
Good afternoon.
You've got Doug and Pat on the line.
Hello, okay. Premier.
Hi, Pat.
We're two of the hosts of Rose City Politics, which is a weekly local program discussing issues that affect Windsor and the surrounding community. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
No problem. I'm happy to do it. I'm sorry
Premier?
We couldn't figure it out when I was down there. Yeah.
That's okay. We're so glad to have this opportunity. We won't take up a lot of your time. We know it's short, so we are going to just jump right into it.
Okay.
Premier, in your visit to Windsor, you held a number of consultations with community leaders, including Labour, the College, and the local Chamber of Commerce. Mm-hmm. One of the topics you discussed was the proposed minimum wage increase. What thoughts did you come away with from those discussions with those groups?
Well, first of all, it was a real privilege to be able to sit down with leadership from the labor movement, from the college and university sector, from the business community, because we had business leaders at the table as well, and to talk about the uncertainty of work that we're all confronting. You know, the globalization of our economy has meant that we have more part-time work, we have people who are having more trouble scheduling and putting together a full-time job, and there's just even though the province is doing well and the economy is growing, there's a group of people that really is not benefiting from that economic growth. So our Fair Workplaces change is about that. It's about reinjecting some certainty into the workplace. That includes changes around payment of part-time and full-time work to make that the same. If you're doing the same job, whether you're doing it full-time or part-time, get paid the same. And it also includes minimum wage. And so we did hear from the various groups. There were different perspectives at the table, as you can imagine. There were many people who were very supportive of the minimum wage, and I would say everyone believes it's the right thing to do to increase the minimum wage to $15, but there is concern among some of the business leaders about how their businesses are going to make the transition. So I assured them, as I have businesses in other parts of the province, that we want them to thrive. Windsor is a great news story in terms of climbing out of the recession, and we want to make sure that that Windsor continues on the path that it's on, and we'll be bringing out some supports for business in the fall. We're just now gathering input from business, and we'll be talking more about that come fall.
And do you have any sense for us of what type of things that the government might do to address the concerns of the business community?
Well, we're just putting that together, and I'm not trying to avoid being specific, but you know, businesses have said things to me like they are going to have challenges paying the increase in the minimum wage in the short term at least, and also being able to train their employees. So, you know, is there something that we could help on training dollars? There are regulations that we're always looking for ways to make business flow more smoothly. And so are there some regulations that we could look at? Are there certain fees that businesses pay? And I said when I was in Windsor at one of the media conferences, you know, restaurant owners have said to me that fees, including some of the fees that they pay to the LCBO, for example, can create a burden. So we're looking at all of that to see if there are changes that we can make that can, as I say, help businesses through the transition, particularly small businesses. The reality is that there are many, many businesses in Ontario, thousands of businesses in Ontario, that already pay more than the minimum wage, and they already pay more than $15 an hour, so they will not be as affected.
Premier, you also met with members of our city council and mayor. The mayor described it as a productive meeting, and he also noted that it was the first time, at least in his recollection, that a premier had joined members of Windsor City Council to have informal conversation on the issues that are top of mind in our community. Can you tell us a little bit about those issues and that discussion?
Yes, absolutely. And I was, you know, I complimented Mayor Dilkins and the council for setting this up, because it was a very good discussion. I often meet with mayors. I often meet with individual councillors or groups of councillors, but I hadn't had the opportunity to sit down with virtually the whole council and the mayor. So that was a great opportunity. There were some very specific items that the mayor raised, and I think it will be of no surprise to anyone that he talked to me and they talked to me about the Paul Martin building, the University of Windsor project. They talked to me about the issues around the Canadian Club Brand Center. So some very specific local issues, and we are certainly going to follow up with them, and our ministers are engaged on those issues. They also spoke with me about funding for municipalities vis-a-vis the implementation of the legalization of cannabis. And that's something that I'm very aware of. I when I was in the United States, we certainly had the opportunity to talk to the governor of Colorado, where this has already happened. And when I was at the meeting of the premiers, premiers across this country are asking questions, and we don't have all the answers yet from the federal government, but we will work with them. And likewise, we'll work with the municipalities as they implement changes. And then finally, we talked about a number of other things, but the other very urgent issue that we talked about was the opioid crisis. And the mayor and council made it clear to me that there have been increases in the last 2 years. There is a local strategy that's being developed. We are at the provincial level. We're meeting with municipal leaders, but we know there needs to be a sharing of information. So there was one summit held some weeks ago with municipal leaders here in Toronto, and that is an ongoing conversation with municipalities.
Premier Wynne, there have been significant investments in infrastructure made by the provincial as well as the federal government, and they've really helped the economic recovery in our area. Did you discuss infrastructure issues at all, and what sense did you come away from with those discussions?
We did. We did talk about infrastructure funding, and I think the bottom line on infrastructure funding is that we need to continue to see that infrastructure money flowing. There are many, many projects that that still need to be addressed. There was a concern about Connecting Links funding, so funding that is available to municipalities on roads that are, in essence, partially provincial and partially municipal. And we have put a fund in place, a $30 million fund by 2019, which will be predictable, consistent funding. So we continue to work with municipalities, take their advice on ongoing infrastructure funding. I think the big thing for Windsor and the region, and quite frankly across the province, is that they want to be able to, the leaders of the communities want to be able to count on infrastructure dollars. You know, they need those infrastructure dollars to be predictable. And so I certainly assured the council that we will continue to make infrastructure investments and continue to work with them to see that their priority projects get addressed.
Now, given Windsor's position as a border city, trade is very important to us. Did your consultations during your visit to Windsor touch on trade issues?
Absolutely. In all of the meetings that I had, I talked about the work that I'm doing in the United States with my colleague governors to ensure that we are all clear how important our interconnected economies are and how there are jobs on both sides of the border that are dependent on each other. And so I think in Windsor, there's hardly a better example of a community that exemplifies the integrated economy. I tweeted a picture. I went running on, I guess it was on Friday morning, and there were transport trucks going across the bridge in the background, and that's the story of Windsor and Detroit. You know, it's that back and forth, and it's not only goods going back and forth, but I know there are people who work on either side of the border and live on the other side of the border. So it is a very, very integrated economy that we're dealing with, and I committed to all of the folks that I spoke to that I would continue to make that point. Of course, NAFTA can be improved. There's no doubt about that. No agreement is perfect, and there are big pieces of the economy that aren't even included in NAFTA because they weren't really prominent 25 years ago. You know, the internet, the e-commerce, all of those kinds of things that really were not a very big deal 25 years ago when NAFTA was negotiated. But now those need to have rules around them, and we need to understand how we work together on in those areas. So I think there's a lot of work to be done, but I'm optimistic. The governors that I have spoken to, the senators and congresspeople that I've spoken to, all understand how integrated we are. We just need to make sure that that understanding translates into a good, fair deal for Canada and Ontario.
What do you think would be the most important issue or the most important single opportunity for Ontario in NAFTA renegotiation?
Well, as I said, I think there are some areas around the new technology and cyber realities that I think that's an opportunity. I think that there are possibilities around environmental and labor concerns that potentially there could be improvements for Ontario and for Canada. So, you know, it is up to the federal government to negotiate those things. But because our auto sector, our agriculture are so connected to the United States. I think we need to look to those sectors to look for improvements.
Premier Wynne, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for visiting us recently, but also for your time that you shared your thoughts on that visit today. And we look forward to speaking with you and seeing you again.
You're very, very welcome. And I had the opportunity to visit the Dairy Freeze in Essex, and that was big fun. So I look forward to coming back.
Terrific. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. And we're back.
That was an interesting interview, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Interesting she agreed to talk to us. That's fun.
And just...
Yeah, congratulations on setting that up, by the way, guys.
Yeah it was it was a real honor to get to do it, and glad that she could do it for Rose City Politics. I think she had a really good visit in the community. She certainly went and spoke to a lot of... she went to a lot of places, spoke to a lot of people. And, very open about the discussions, the challenges.
Yeah, absolutely. So we will be coming to the Dairy Freeze to get our sponsorship check.
We will work for ice cream. Yeah. Anyone knows that out there, but
so
that's all we need.
We discussed, I think, a few topics and all of it in the context of the visit of the Premier to Windsor. There are a couple of different directions that I'd like to go with this conversation, but I'm curious, Kieran, what did you hear there? What pulled jumped out at you from that interview?
Okay, so I will say a few, let me start with some positive things. I'm very happy that the Premier chose to meet with the broad array and cross section of people that she did choose to meet with, including the meeting with the council and all of the councillors there. I'm not sure who was the driving force behind making that, arranging the meeting happen in that format, but I thought that was excellent. And as I said, I think that she did come here with the intention to learn, but also to communicate. So I think she came down here with some good intentions. The discussion on the minimum wage, I think, is one that is an interesting discussion for our region, and something that I'm glad to see that was held with a number of stakeholders at the table. What I guess where I will, and I know that it wasn't only the Premier driving the agenda in terms of the topics that were discussed, but let me take the Paul Martin Building as a for example. The Paul Martin Building, first of all, it's a federal building. I understand that there's a deal that's in place to potential deal out there. And I'm sure that that's what the lobbying was about. And if I were to just guess what the conversations were about, because we hear the Paul Martin building was discussed, but there's nothing more to it. I'll give you a plausible or potentially plausible scenario. The University of Windsor doesn't want to pay for the remediation of that building. The federal government will not pay for the remediation of that building. Every single mechanical system in that building is in need of either major upgrade or complete replacement. I'm no engineer, I'm no building person. It's a $30 million project to bring it up to speed. The university is not going to buy that building for any amount of money, whether it's a dollar or whatever, and put anyone in there until all of those issues are resolved. So I think we're about a million miles away on that. And for people here locally to say, okay, Premier Wynne, can you write a $30 million check to make it possible for the university to come there? I think I'm surprised that issue was so high on the agenda. I would have been pushing or trying to get some details about the high-speed rail proposals that were that have been talked about at the provincial level. The Great Lakes would have been another issue. I know that the provinces put some money into funding for a variety of different projects for the Great Lakes in terms of environmental, and there's some infrastructure money there. But there's some serious problems that have been ongoing for a number of years with respect to harmful algae blooms and that sort of thing. So I guess the biggest takeaway from it is, two things again. Happy she met with the range of people she met with. I think she has a better understanding of our community as a result of that. I think that there were some missed opportunities with respect to maybe issues that were potentially more pressing that could be that needed to be brought to her attention, but she got a few things right, in my opinion.
So, you know, you raised some really good points, and I guess part of the discussion is, you know, who selected the topics and when. And so I know I can speak in terms of our particular interview. We were given 10 minutes, so we chose to pick two of the issues that we felt were important to the region, and then to also ask her twice about the discussions around the city council table with the mayor. And that's where the Paul Martin building came up. So let me just back up with some information that I'm aware of in terms of how those issues came to be. My understanding is that when it was known that the premier would be meeting with city council, and I believe, I'm pretty confident this is accurate, that all the members of council and the mayor, with the exception of Bill Mara, were there that day. And they were requested to submit topics to the mayor, to the mayor's office. And there were more than 10, 9 or 10, but 9 or 10 made a list. And the Paul Martin building was on that list. So obviously somebody put that issue forward from around the city council table. And so you're right. So the criticism, I think, is really directed towards, you know, our municipal sort of leadership, if that's, you know, and I don't know who came up with the list. I know that there were contributions, or at least a request for contributions from everybody on city council. So was that the mayor's office? Was that the mayor personally? I don't know how that landed. I assume that the mayor would have, you know, some final say in terms of what should be discussed. I think that would be, and that would be fair.
And to be clear, sorry, Doug, like I'm not saying the Paul Martin building shouldn't have been perhaps an agenda item. The fact that it has been sort of, this is like the number two thing that we talked about with the premier.
You've got 45 minutes, however long it was with the mayor. That's your top three. I mean, I can think of 10 more off the top of my head that are far, far more important.
Precisely. Put the Paul Martin building aside, because also it's plausible that someone at the university asked for that conversation to happen.
It is possible.
So it's possible that that's a result, that was on the agenda as a result of some kind of lobbying. On what planet does the CC Brand Center get onto the agenda of this meeting?
On that list.
Right.
Yeah, I don't even understand. Like, maybe I'm naive, but I don't even understand what that has to do. Why would you discuss that? What can she do about the situation?
I believe they're seeking an exemption to certain rules around the sale of alcohol.
There's a small legal change that needs to happen, but, I mean, minuscule.
Is that the biggest issue we have in the city?
Particularly when we're going to, you know, at some point go on to discuss the fact that Mega Hospital did not actually make that list.
Right.
All right. So let's put that in perspective. But I do want to address something, Kieran. And again, that's just rising, just coming from her interview in terms of those comments. I do want to say that we happen to also be at a gathering with the premier on Thursday night before she met with those groups, and I know for a fact that the issue of the algae bloom and the Great Lakes was a topic of some extensive conversation on Thursday evening. Ken Schmidt was there, who former IRCA, and the work that he's done. And I know that the premier invited him to Toronto and whatever a group to meet, because there's work coming up and meetings in the U.S. And so she wants to be fully updated. She was advised that we are not moving as quickly and as forward as we ought to have been. And I think she acknowledged and was very receptive to that information and grateful to have it. And so just to take from your point.
That's great. Yeah. I guess all I'm saying is, and especially almost from, I'm looking at who was driving the conversation here locally. It's no secret that the province is investing money in Great Lakes restoration initiatives. So, I mean, it's a very important issue for us in this region. So I would be interested to understand specifically how those dollars are going to be rolled out, what specific areas are going to be impacted, what collaborations you're already having with your partners in the United States. Is there anything that we can do here locally through the connections that we have to facilitate any of those discussions at different levels of government with different people that we know? All of those things that, because Great Lakes protection issues and Great Lakes, anything Great Lakes, because of its bilateral nature, they're incredibly complicated. So it would have been there again. There was the opportunity there to sort of get a better understanding of how we can work together to move this this file forward, given that you've already identified it as a priority area at the provincial level, right? So
fair enough. Yeah.
Yep. Don, anything jump out for you from that interview?
Aside from the things that weren't talked about and that apparently were talked about, depending on who you listen to, in a mega hospital never came up at all in her comments.
No, right. No. Certainly, I think there were some important topics that that were brought up, but that's not one that, if it was mentioned, it certainly didn't make it into her memory banks. What interested me about the comments, and I just want to move over to the discussion on NAFTA, which I thought, and I understand that that is an agreement that's made between governments at the federal level, but I think there were some interesting comments from the Premier. First of all, I was really encouraged to hear from a political leader a recognition that the issues are not only the cross-border transfer of goods, but that there is an issue of cross-border work. That is extremely important to this community, that literally thousands of people in this community work across the border. I think it's really good that folks in government are increasingly aware of that reality, and that when they enter trade negotiations, it's not just about the widgets moving across the border, it's about the people too. I noted the comments about the new economy and not being recognized in NAFTA, and what I wonder about that, and this is just maybe a little bit of a leap from the comments the Premier made, certainly, but I wonder if some of that intellectual property rule and regulation harmonization that was proposed in TPP might not reemerge in NAFTA negotiations. And Kieran, I wonder if you have any thoughts on that.
Well, let me step back a second. I thought that was really good that she had those discussions on the NAFTA front. She, although trade is a again another issue that falls primarily in the federal basket, the Premier does have a the provincial level of government plays a big role in facilitating trade, and we've seen that here in our region with her Great Parkway as a for example in the infrastructure investments. Do I think the TPP or some type of version of the TPP has an opportunity to emerge within the NAFTA negotiations? Well, there's two things to think about.
Well, particularly the intellectual property stuff, right?
So I don't know if the Premier actually took a position on TPP. Just even thinking about where that might go, it's hard for me to think about that to sort of predict where that might have gone.
Yeah, I would say not currently, but yeah. She's taken a position on TPP because we not only did we approve it federally, but they didn't do that federally until they had all the provinces sign on, and okay. They made agreements with all the provinces to sign on to TPP.
So that does have to happen prior to, and that would have happened under the Harper government.
Right,
so
it's and interesting. She was premier at that time, yeah. So she would have approved.
So you're correct in saying she has taken a position on TPP. So perhaps, it would be interesting because at the end of the day, the Trump government, the Trump administration has moved away from TPP aggressively. I'm not sure if the intellectual property piece was the primary motivation for them to do that. In fact, I don't think it was. So I don't know if I guess a long-winded answer there to say I don't know if the IP issues are going to come back in the NAFTA rethink. I think they, to be honest, they invariably have to. Whether or not that is consistent with what was conceptualized in the TPP remains to be seen.
Sure. To me, the IP stuff in the TPP was one of the major concessions Canada was making to the U.S. and to the rest of the trading partners, particularly harmonizing our copyright rules with the U.S. much longer copyright terms. So I wonder if that's something that's been discussed, because it would be one of the aspects of the now gone TPP deal that would potentially be attractive to American interests and some of the interests that are presumably lobbying the U.S. federal government quite heavily.
I don't know if that comes back up under NAFTA, though, because the main reason we were giving that up before wasn't because of the U.S. It was because of the other TPP partners. I mean, we already have our NAFTA agreement, so without TPP, we're good. It was a lot of the other countries that were demanding it as well. Under the current, if they put that back on the table, the U.S. has to cough up something, too. I mean, if they want to put that back on the table, okay, we put corn subsidies back on the table. it's all open, but I don't know if that necessarily has to be a big giveaway on Canada's part. I mean, it's a big item, but the U.S. has to put something equally big on the table if we're going
to
do that.
It's interesting. Well, I can tell you that one of the things I'd like to see is and I think that if you're going to be consumer friendly and you're thinking about individuals and families, that intellectual property needs to not stop at the border any longer. You know, the distribution zones where the world is carved up and IP is parceled out at over different times into different companies with different rights. I think that's something that in every international trade agreement that we have to look at and discuss. And I don't know that that's going to be part of the NAFTA agreement or the discussions. But when we talk about modernizing to address the internet and new technology, we're really, what can we possibly be talking about besides intellectual property?
Well, yeah, and you know, the thing is that within, you know, there are trade agreements, and then there's, you know, even you take one step further back, and there's the bigger piece of the puzzle that they may very well be impacted by even a larger body, including, you know, World Trade Organization and the TRIPS Agreement, and whatever ties and agreements that have been signed off there. So, bit of a more complicated issue. I don't know if you're done with that, because I want to just sort of move on about, you know, what wasn't mentioned perhaps in terms of issues, or what were selected locally. But a couple of things that I heard, and one in particular was on the infrastructure question that you asked her, Doug, and that was where there seemed to have been a sort of a welcoming of where the province can help out the municipality, where, for example, in the case of roads, where those roads are primarily or have some affiliation, you know, as a provincial
EC Row.
EC Row, yeah. Exactly, mm-hmm. Where I was going with it, Kieran. So, mm-hmm. I hope that the councillors and the mayor around the table heard that, as we did in the interview,
yep.
Because to me that presents an incredible opportunity if there is a willingness to engage in having that conversation. And the other one was, she mentioned the opioid crisis, and then we saw recently, I think it was today or yesterday, there was a story, I think it was AM800, with Councillor Bordelon taking the lead in hearing, you know, I think if it's the meeting with the Premier that motivated local action towards understanding that I think the amount was $130 million in funding, and that's for mental health and also drug addiction and the complicated and complexities of those issues in our community. If that's what, if it was the visit from the Premier that at least moved, you know, the motivation along, I think those are some pretty good takeaways from that one visit.
I agree. Maybe to also segue off of that a little bit, another area that I thought was, so you talked about the opioid crisis, the issue of cannabis was brought up,
right.
And the legalization. And, you know, I thought there was two interesting aspects. So I assume that was, you know, we've already heard Mayor Dilkins's concerns. So I'm going to assume that it was him that sort of drove that piece of it. But it, you know, on that front, I think he's got some very legitimate questions. I'm not sure he needs to be as nervous as he seems to be, but there's some very pertinent questions, particularly for our community. I think once legalization does occur, Windsor is going to be at the front lines of distribution and all the whole range of questions. We might become one of the first cannabis destinations in Canada, frankly speaking. And so we're going to be. That's going to be an issue, a big issue for us. So I'm glad to see that was brought forward. The reply from the Premier being, we're still waiting for clarification on the government, from the federal government. To be honest, that gives me a tremendous amount of pause. I'm deeply concerned about that, because it seems, I don't want to go too deep into this rabbit hole. But if we're less than a year away from full-blown legalization happening, and there's still major questions that the Premier is saying are unanswered, that's something I think we should all be concerned about. Another area, so I think it's interesting as well that she kind of, you know, she showed a willingness in some respects to call out the federal cousins, if you will, just, you know, remarking on the political relationship. It's a Liberal. Kathleen Wynne has been very upfront about her support for the Prime Minister and vice versa, frankly. But, you know, she kind of called him out on that one. And there's another, it didn't get a lot of, it was a very quick mention, but she talked about precarious work. And I thought immediately was taken back to a piece. I know, Doug, I posted it online. I think you took me to task for it. I characterized Bill Morneau's position on precarious work as being a basically a terrible economic strategy. The comment that the finance minister had made at the time that I was objecting to was that people are just going to have to get used to it, essentially. This is just the reality. I'm not sure that the premier was thinking about the federal finance minister when she talked about I need to think about different ways that we can mitigate the precariousness of work.
But I would happen to be in the room when Minister Morneau made those comments, and I think actually it's interesting because this is exactly what he was talking about, that we need to recognize that the market has changed and the market of work has changed, and that supports need to be put in place for folks so that precarious work is not something that causes financial and personal hardship. I do think that there's a connection between the two. I'm not so sure one's a repudiation of the other.
So I maybe not a repudiation. I can meet you halfway on that, perhaps. But to me, it seems like the way that the finance minister, Bill Morneau, had framed it was, this is a reality that we are going to have to work to address in one way, shape, or form. Whereas the premier took the position of, it's something we're going to try to fight. So I think that there's a difference in terms of how it's the problem is interpreted.
It's putting some regulatory brackets around precarious work, right? So, I'm not familiar with all the ins and outs of the legislation that's been proposed. I know the minimum wage is what's grabbed the most headlines, but certainly around hours of work, around scheduling, there's some protection for workers there that didn't exist before. And I think that those are the kind of things that we have to do, that governments need to do to adapt to the changing realities of the workplace. So, I understand where you're coming from, and I think it was a better answer? Yes. But it's, I don't think that there's a contradiction between the two.
Looking at the whole, meeting with council. I mean, there was also, she had a meeting at the University of Windsor, and she had one with the local labor and the Chamber of Commerce. But specifically, you know, getting back to City Hall, this is a meeting of most of our councillors, the mayor with the premier, Paul Martin Building, and the Brand Center. We talked about that. But I got the sense from the premier's interview that she was driving more of the agenda and the topics than what our councillors are. I mean, again, I go back to however long the meeting was. This is 30, 40, 50 minutes, an hour, where you have the premier of the province, who is the main funder of our municipality for a number of different programs. And what did we talk about? I mean, none of the topics even reach our top 50 list of things that are important to Windsor on multiple levels. And then on top of that,
I think the opioid crisis is a top 50 issue for
Windsor. To a degree, but not just for Windsor. I'm talking Windsor-specific items that are absolutely specific to Windsor. And this is our one opportunity the next three, four years.
The mayor may very well say, look, the Brand Center is very specific to Windsor. So,
No, but that's like one job. I'm talking major issue. I'm talking hundreds, thousands of jobs for the future. Jobs and diversification are obviously a huge topic for Windsor. So many other things. But then on top of that, typically when they do a roundtable meeting like this, usually there's a summary that's put out afterwards. These are the questions and topics discussed, blah, 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 blah. All we have is a little bit of who knows what said when by who. And
segue into some transparency
It goes back to transparency issues with our council.
So why don't we take a short break, and then we can come back and talk about the fallout from the premier's visit, which is ongoing and fascinating in my books.
And it will be fun.
It will be fun. and welcome back to Rose City Politics for August 2nd, 2017.
Apparently you ain't seen nothing yet. That's what Strong was saying.
I thought that was an appropriate one for what's coming up next.
So we spent the first half of this program
fawning over the premier. That's why they didn't let me talk.
Talking about, I thought it was because you didn't do your homework. talking about the listening to the premier, interview with the premier, talking about the visit and some of the issues that we thought came out of it. And in this half of the show, we're going to start and maybe finish by talking about the fallout from that particular.
So basically you're saying we can just scrap all the other topics that we said we were going to talk about. Cause it's not even half. We're like 20 minutes.
Maybe we'll try. All right. But no, we're not going to happen.
I'm just telling you. We actually have a live studio audience tonight.
We do. Yeah.
So shout out to our live studio audience. Thanks for joining us. We won't say who they are. I might say if somebody walks me to my car.
Okay, so who wants to set the table for this discussion? Any volunteers around the table?
This is Don. This has got to be Don.
Well, how do you set this up? I mean, so the mayor came out and he stated what was talked about around the table with the premier. And unfortunately, there seems to be some discrepancies in that. And then the follow-up to that was, well, maybe it wasn't talked about around the table. Maybe it was when I was walking her back to her car and, being creepy or something.
Well, you have to, stretch it out, even though we don't have a lot of time. I think it matters.
Yeah. The mayor indicated in an interview with CTV that the mega hospital was a topic of discussion and a significant topic of discussion. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, the mayor mentioned that moving to the next stage of the process was discussed with the premier.
We have a clip.
So let's play that clip.
It was initially in a story on AIM 800, mm-hmm. which Councillor Holt responded to on social media, which drove another story. I mean, Councillor Holt said, wait a minute, we didn't discuss that.
Because my understanding is that Councillor Holt had wanted to talk about the mega hospital. The topic did not make it onto the meeting's agenda, so it was very surprising that that then became a talking point for the mayor.
Well, not only did it not make the agenda, to be clear, it was not discussed. I think there's no question about those facts.
Yes.
It was not discussed at the meeting.
Yeah.
And so the mayor, immediately following the meeting, gave an interview. I think we have just a very short clip. I think it's CTV. CTV's clip.
Yeah, from CTV Windsor, from their Friday evening broadcast.
It's the first time, I think, that I can recall that a sitting premier came and just met informally with City Council. And some of the big issues that we brought up to the premier were the Paul Martin Building, number one, the hospital project, number two, Canadian Club Brand Center was a big issue.
It's okay. So,
it was the number two issue on the whole meeting, so too bad she didn't remember it.
Yeah. Well, so I just come back to why. Why would you do this? Now, I have an answer to my own question, but I want to hear what people...
Part of that as well is going back to the initial AIM 800 story now.
Yeah.
Is Drew gave a specific quote to AIM 800 that said, the premier oppressed upon councillors the importance of moving to the next stage.
Yeah.
Now, that's a very, very specific point. Okay. It's almost like the premier...
No, sorry. The premier impressed or council impressed?
No, the premier impressed upon councillors that it was important to move to the next phase.
Okay.
It was a very specific point, and the reason it stood out for me right away, it was almost like, hey, the premier is chastising those who are considered not on board with a project. Hey, you need to get on board and mm-hmm. move ahead. And that's what was very, very specifically, I think, what really irritated Councillor Holt to actually respond.
So what I find perplexing, and go back to my question, why would the mayor do something that was so easily disproved?
Well, you can find out he's not telling the truth easily.
And on an issue that is so highly controversial.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like that's just going to fly under the radar. And it took Holt about you know, 10 seconds to fire off the Facebook post saying, well, I don't think I remember that conversation.
Just for clarification, this is the quote from the AM 800 piece. So here's the mayor's quote in full from the AM 800 piece. The first time I think that I can recall that a sitting premier came and just met informally with city council. Some of the big issues that were brought that we brought up to the premier were the Paul Martin building, the hospital project, and the Canadian Club Brand Center. That was a big issue. Then the further the quote continues, that project still hasn't moved to phase two. She's aware of the need to see that project move into the next phase.
Yeah.
So there, there is.
No, there is another story that gives that quote.
Okay. You know, I don't know that it matters to the conversation that we're having. I just want to be a little more accurate about it.
Because he was using it. He's accusing Councillor Holt now of using this for political means, and he was blatantly using it himself for political means. I think it's very, very relevant.
I think there's no question about it, because I think here's what fair enough, Paul. I think that what's important is that, you know, did the conversation take place? You know, after being called on it, he clarifies that the conversation didn't take place, but, you know, and he's sorry that it may have been misconstrued, perhaps misinterpreted. You know, he didn't mean to imply that it happened around the meeting with council, but happened, you know, in speaking to the premier on the way to the vehicle as she departed or arrived, whatever the case may be. But that quote that you just read, Doug, is very clear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is not a misinterpretation.
He says we, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's not, you know.
So, you know, so we can take this in a number of different directions. So here's, and you know, I don't think you had a chance to say why, Kieran. So if you want to just hold on for a moment, I just want to make a couple of other points. So number one, let's look at it both ways. Either that conversation took place or it didn't. The point is it didn't take place around the table with all the councillors. That's a pretty big problem, especially when we know, and we've heard from at least one councillor who said, you know, he put the discussion forward and it wasn't done. So why not? Why wasn't it there? Now, fine. If you want to say it didn't make the list for whatever reason, I think we could have another conversation about that. But then why have, if we take it at face value that there was a private conversation, why? Why have a private conversation with the premier? I mean, either way you slice this, this is not good.
So the I would suggest that the reason why you don't have that included on the broader council agenda item is because you know definitively that it's not unanimous, that there's at least one person on that council who has voted consistently against the project moving forward, whether that means Councillor Holt is against the mega hospital project or improved medical services in the area. I don't want to speak to that, but the record is clear. The voting record is clear. So it would not have been unanimous had it come up in that setting. So he would not have had the opportunity to say it's unanimous.
You know, I'm wondering really though, and this is sheer speculation. Mm-hmm. You know, why you ask the question, why say it then? Perhaps there was pressure from a completely different lobby group, if you will, or interest group, and that is those that are really interested in making sure that the mega hospital moves forward. And so maybe there had been some commitment to at least raise the issue, and then for whatever reason decided that, you know, the council table was not the place to do it.
Well, the question to be asked then is, we know that councillors also submitted topics to the mayor's office. So who selected the topics to be discussed at that meeting and why? And I think those are legitimate questions to ask now.
I think there's absolutely no doubt it was the mayor that chose the topics that were going to make it onto the agenda. They you know, quarterbacked the meeting. So, you know, and that's what makes the story even less plausible, the story from the mayor himself in terms of this was discussed at the meeting, when he knows that he explicitly excluded it from the formal agenda for the informal meeting. So I'll answer my question now. I think it was a political trap. I think it's a complete political trap, because to tease this debate out, and maybe I'm going to get criticized for the idea of, you know, is he playing three-dimensional chess or checkers? I'm going to give him credit for playing three-dimensional chess.
You are going to be criticized for that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
yeah.
So we've all...
I want to hear the rest of this. Yeah. Really?
So let me finish my point, and then you can tell me how overthinking I am or whatever it might be.
Okay.
By p- pushing this discussion out there, and by pushing this discussion out there in that way, saying it's unanimous, he's forcing people who aren't on side to pop up and say, no, it's not unanimous. So now suddenly he has Councillor Chris Holt officially now on the record, as official as it can be, for the next election, saying this guy right here, if you want a new hospital, you're not getting it if you reelect him. So, and anyone else who wants to call the mayor out on whether or not this is a unanimous position of ever, you know, from anyone in the community, now is on one side of the one side of the aisle or the other side of the aisle, and I think he thinks that this issue is going to be a wedge issue in the upcoming municipal campaign, and he thinks he's on the right side of it by being on the pro mega hospital.
Okay, so, I'm going to take you to task on that one. Yeah. So, except for the fact that if Chris Holt runs for re-election, he's running in Ward 4. So go figure.
Sure.
But having said that, he can do that anyway. He didn't need to. I mean, I unless you're suggesting that he went out there knowing that it hadn't been discussed, to say that it was discussed so that it could blow up, so that we can point to Chris Holt as sort of not being on board, as not being on board. Well, nobody else came forward. The only other person that they spoke to was Councillor Bordelon, who simply didn't talk about the substantive issue about the MAGA hospital, but confirmed, because he was asked whether it was discussed, and he confirmed that it wasn't. But the fact is that, he didn't have to do that. There's plenty of time. I don't think, Councillor Holt, hides his position on the mega hospital. In fact, had they put it on the table and had they allowed him to express his difference of opinion or to depart from what the mayor portrays to be this united opinion around the council table, that would have actually, gone further in terms of what you're trying to say.
So
So 2 points.
You're
on
convincing
that.
On that, but yeah, I'll
so
address that.
So first point is I got to agree with Pat. I don't think that if the mayor wanted to draw attention to something, the best way to do that is not to stab himself in the face, which is what's happened here, right? So
I'll
I don't.
Show
them. Exactly. I don't agree with that. Let's look at what is the most charitable possible interpretation. Okay, given the fact. So this was not discussed at the meeting. I think we have some confirmation that this did not happen at the meeting. So the most charitable possible interpretation is that the mayor got carried away on a raft of his own bullshit and just said something that he 5 seconds later was thinking, man, why did I say that?
Yeah.
It's plausible.
Yeah,
it happens
to
everybody.
Sure.
But why double down?
But then he had the chance to correct it.
Exactly. Yeah. What do you do after that is what tells.
Right.
Because the right response to misspeaking, making a mistake, is to either go dark and wait for it to die or walk it back.
Correct the record.
Just say, you know what? Yeah, I made a mistake in my excitement, knowing that, mega hospital is a big issue, and for whatever reason threw it out there. Yeah. Just admit it. But not only does he double down, he does it in a way that I find completely distasteful. He talks about councillors, two of them, because there were two councillors, Ward 3 City Councillor Reno Bordelon, Ward 4 City Councillor Chris Holt, who spoke to the media when Chris Holt raised it on social media, and Reno Bordelon, backed up the fact that it wasn't discussed. Interestingly enough, did they call the other councillors? Did any of the other councillors come forward to support at least the other councillors who were telling the truth about what did not happen at that meeting?
Right.
Or do they not return media calls or what? I don't know. But yeah,
Isn't that interesting?
So here's what the mayor had to say after, in response to sort of the, when it became a story on social media and also on AIM 800. He says, quote, "This is just an example of when there's a misunderstanding. They don't call me first. They run to social media to try and make a story about it." So he redirects the problem. The problem, of course, are the councillors, particularly Chris Holt, who, didn't pick up the phone to get clarification.
They don't kiss the ring.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, this is from an the arrogant same mayor, problem.
Yeah. It's their misunderstanding, right. Their communication problem, not right. The mayor's right. Incapable of communicating properly.
We just read what he said. It was pretty clear interpretation,
yeah.
And I think, you know, social media, get used to it. This is how people communicate as well.
The first thing I thought of when I read that quote was, well, I just remember about a month or two ago when the mayor in the middle of a council session is tweeting out an unflattering picture of another councillor.
Right.
So he's got plenty of time to run to social media, quote unquote, and do whatever he thinks is
apparently
important for him to do. Yeah, exactly. But so what a bizarre way
it's
to...
It's typical sword and shield politics done by somebody who doesn't really get it. Because when you're being attacked on something you're vulnerable on, go to your strength, pull out your sword and shield and attack. He just does it so clumsily and so badly that, I mean... If anybody was his political advisor, they should be walking around Windsor with a bag on their head.
The problem in this particular case is there was no sword, right? So, you know, take out the shield and work it. Quote,
Captain America.
If the councillors have any concerns about my communications or conversations with the premier, the best place to start is usually to call me and seek clarification. You know, he talks about good relations and that this doesn't improve relations. And really, he's the one adding fuel to this fire. Because, and I'm just going to say it again, I said it on social media, but I'm going to repeat it here. Did the mayor contact Chris Holt, who was the person who put the issue on who wanted the mega hospital issue on the agenda? It did make the agenda. Certainly the mayor had some control over the agenda. So you've got a city councillor who wants it on there. It doesn't get on. Purportedly, the mayor has a conversation with the premier. Obviously, there's at least one person around that table who has a keen interest in finding out that there was a conversation. Did he communicate? Did he pick up the phone? Did he tell, you know, Councillor Holt that? So this is a real problem in how he addresses council and turns, or at least some councillors, and you know, here's the last piece I want to read from here. The story refers to, you know, it says, as for Bortland's part, he simply confirmed Holt's claim that the subject wasn't raised at the meeting. But Dilkins had to come back on that one and says, it's just another example of councillors stirring the pot of public opinion. Wow.
How dare they call out my lies?
That's about it.
Oh, no, that's exactly what he's saying. He's saying, you know, don't focus on the fact that I just said a lot of crap that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Focus on the fact that they had the nerve and the audacity to call me out for it and tell everybody what really happened. And I agree with Pat's point earlier. Where are the other councillors? Why aren't they saying, oh, yeah, the conversation never happened?
There's not a single one of the six that are going to say anything this. They're going to run and hide from this issue all day long.
I guess the enhanced capital budget only goes so far.
The other important factor in all this, too, I mean, we've actually narrowed it down. Pat had alluded to it, that the possibility that it happened when he was walking her into the building from her car, or that it happened when he was walking her out of the building when nobody else was around. But the timing of the clip that we played, that was CTV News, and from what we've been able to determine, that interview happened immediately following the meeting. So they left the meeting, the mayor walked into the hallway, did the meeting with CTV News. After that, they went back into the council chambers, did a 10-minute photo op, then he walked her out the door. So in that clip he gave to CTV News, he hadn't walked the premier out the door yet.
Yeah.
And he said, number two issue we discussed was mega hospital. So that only leaves the meet and greet when he walked her in the building. And what does it take to walk from the front door of City Hall to council chambers, including, you know, your elevator ride? 2 minutes?
You know, and so here's the thing. Clearly it wasn't a significant enough conversation for the premier to have, you know, reported on it as saying it was one of the top issues that were discussed, and it certainly wasn't discussed around the table. So, you know what, I'm just going to cut him some slack right now and basically say, okay, let's just accept that that's how it happened. There are two, I think, real issues here. The first one is that the mega hospital was not discussed around the council table, and the manner in which it happened, even if we accept, you know, it as complete as the mayor has stated it. And the second one is his palpable disdain, is how I called it earlier, in disrespect towards the other two councillors in particular, who had the audacity to simply say, you know what, Not clear why, but that's not the way that it happened. You know, he's on social media, so he obviously saw it. He's on social media. He could have gone up and said, hey, you know, responded to Councillor Holt. It's one of his own councillors, and simply said, you know, sorry I didn't update you, Chris, but actually there was a brief discussion that I had with the Premier. I'd be happy to update you or to provide some clarification on it.
Which brings me back to my political trap theory. I mean, why else would he not do that? If he had really done it with such unpolitically minded or unstrategic, motivations, then why not have that conversation? I think it was completely strategic.
Oh, you give way too much credit.
I think so too.
It was.
I'm gonna add this to my list of nicknames jocular nicknames for the mayor. Drew 3D Chess Dilkins. I think that's one that we can put in the books. Speaking of things that we can put in the books, I believe that this edition of Rose City Politics is about to go into the books. That's all the time that we have to chat. Any final thoughts from anyone on the panel?
Just a little technical note, because we started a little late tonight and there was a little bit of a break halfway through. I mean, shortly after, I will have a completely full edited copy of this posted, and you'll be able to access it through the website and through speaker. So you'll be able to, if you didn't catch everything, you'll be able to get the whole episode in one shot.
Okay. Anything else? Anything on the topic of the Premier's visit or the Mayor's subsequent interesting adventures?
I think the Mayor has to understand that the conversations he's having in his head with himself are not real.
Yeah.
And he shouldn't say to the media he's talked to people when he's only imagining these things.
Oh, that's an awesome note to end on.
Okay. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Rose City Politics. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook. Just search for Rose City Politics. On Twitter, at RCP Windsor. Or visit us at rosecitypolitics.ca. If you enjoy the show, please consider becoming a Patreon subscriber to help support production costs. You'll find the link on the homepage of Rose City Politics.